Jake Vollenhoek with you guys here on Overtime. Coming up in about 60 minutes, we're going to talk to David Shepard, SiriusXM NBA Radio, talking all things NBA free agency, LeBron, the Cavs rebuilding towards whatever hopefully is going to make them a contender in the next upcoming NBA season. But right now, to help out and help answer all of our questions surrounding the Cleveland sports scene, we head out and talk to our Cleveland sports beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, brought to you courtesy of Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, what's going on?
I am just getting ready for my vacation. That's what's happening. I anticipate all hell is going to break loose before I actually do go on vacation, so that's a good thing for me.
That's good. Daryl, am I allowed to ask where you're going on vacation?
No, you are not, because I'm not going anywhere.
Hey, there's no, listen, that's called a staycation, Daryl, and we love a good staycation. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
That is correct, so.
Listen, you're not going to find anybody else who loves doing absolutely nothing more than me, okay? That sounds like one of my favorite vacations of all time. Now, I'd prefer to do it somewhere on a beach, but I'll take it in the comfort of my own home, too. It's beautiful.
I plan to do nothing and make it everything I thought it could be.
Well, I hope you're looking forward to that, Daryl, but...
Oh, I am.
But obviously, still a lot happening right now. Happy start of NBA free agency, where we've gotten almost nothing official besides players of the likes of Thomas Bryant. But there's obviously the big free agent open and sitting on the market, not going back to L.A. Daryl, I'll just ask you straight out. Do you think LeBron is coming home?
I think it is a 50-50 proposition right now. I think it's a coin toss between Cleveland and Golden State. I think that while LeBron is not going to obviously take Dan Gilbert to the woodshed financially, I think he's probably looking to see what activity the Cavaliers have planned here early in free agency to modify this roster. And then, he could step in and be the missing piece. I would say that LeBron, if he does want to play competitive basketball as he does his farewell tour, the Eastern Conference is probably where he wants to do that. So, and if he wants to turn the Eastern Conference playoffs back into the LeBron Invitational, so be it. But I do think that the Cavaliers would provide him what he's looking for. The fact that James Harden, we don't have dollar figures related to his new contract yet. It really feels like James is giving Kobe Altman the flexibility to make alterations right now. And then, James will then put pen to paper on his multi-year agreement. But I think LeBron is also sitting back and waiting to see what the Cavaliers are able to do to improve this roster and allow him, again, to be the missing piece, if you will.
Joe, I want to take a step aside, ask you about James Harden really quick. Obviously, I think a lot of fans unhappy with the return they got in the short stay of James Harden at the end of last season. Is him taking less money and allowing Kobe the flexibility to try to get something done enough to help shape the perception on James Harden more into a positive?
Well, I think that obviously he's showing what a team player he is from a financial standpoint, because without him, the Cavaliers couldn't do anything this offseason. Had he picked up that player option, they'd still be in the second apron, and there would be other maneuvering that Kobe Altman would need to do to get the franchise desperately out of that second apron. They cannot be a second apron team this season, okay? That is very, very important, because the penalty for being a back-to-back second apron team involves future assets being frozen. And ultimately, when the bill comes due and rebuild time comes again for this organization, which, again, that appears to be a few years off, but when that does come due, if assets are frozen, it really is going to complicate things for the Cavaliers and probably make for some really super miserable basketball seasons here for an extended period of time, because it's going to complicate any type of a rebuild in the future. So it's imperative that when the dust settles this offseason, the Cleveland Cavaliers are not a second apron team once again.
There are obviously a ton of the moves they're going to do in this offseason are going to be centered around that fact. But if we're going back to the LeBron thought of you know, get a team situated to have him be the missing piece. What are some of the moves that you think are necessary to get the Cavs to be that type of team in this offseason?
Well, I mean, the Dean Wade situation is rather interesting right now. I don't know if the Cavaliers can even afford to re-sign him, so that frees up a couple of dollars. Schroeder, what happens with him? I think LeBron's return makes Schroeder's presence moot, so you probably want to offload him. There's obviously been some conversation and reporting that the Chicago Bulls might be interested in Max Strus. And that, too, would free up some dollars. So, those are the bodies going out. As far as the bodies coming in, I'm not real sure right now what LeBron would be looking for. I do feel like having Evan Mobley, having Jarrett Allen, along with LeBron James, Donovan Mitchell, and James Harden, I do feel like that's sufficient firepower.
I would hope so.
You know what I'm saying? That should be sufficient firepower, and then obviously you gotta think about your bench. But you've got a couple of young guys, Jalen Tyson. Let's not forget about him before he got himself into the doghouse in the playoffs. We all remember what happened in Detroit, right? That's a little maturity thing there, and that's okay. He was a pretty significant contributor throughout the season, so you expect that he'll be one of the contributors this coming season as well. So, I'd probably just say grab a beverage or two or three, kick back, relax, and enjoy the ride because I don't think LeBron James is going to have a decision anytime soon. It certainly sounds like he's going to take his sweet old time to deliberate this thing. And if my memory serves me correctly, the last time he came back to Cleveland, it was like July 11th when it happened. So I'm not saying this is going to drag on that long, but I think Kobe Altman's got to get some things in motion to, shall we say, nudge LeBron James one way or the other.
And again, Daryl Ryder with us here. Daryl, how many of the problems that currently exist on the Cavs roster do you think LeBron kind of helps up cover and fix? Because obviously, like, I'm never going to go out here and deny the opportunity.
He fixes the problem at the three.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't replaced him, so he can come in and replace himself, albeit at 41.
Like, I think there's, again, I'm never going to deny the idea of LeBron coming back, but I think situationally, the player you're looking for, like, with the way this team played defense, LeBron getting up there in age, like, you would probably ideally be more looking for somebody who is a two-way forward. I don't know that it necessarily fixes your have a guy to defend the opposing team's best player problem.
Yeah, and that's they may sacrifice a little defense, but if you could, you just got to score more points than the other team, and I kind of feel like they're going to have enough guys who can put the ball in the bucket, so, you know, might not be a big problem until, I don't know, maybe you get into May, when defense does become important. But, I don't think they'll have any problems winning games during the regular season. But, defense, schmeefense,
Just put it to the side. Let's just forget about it all.
You know what? We'll just have the PA announcer scream for defense, and maybe that'll help.
Get the crowd chanting. It might go a long way.
Come on, Cleveland, let them hear you.
All right, Darryl, last one on the NBA free agency. I mean, we've had comments from Donovan teammates about this being the Donovan era when we had heard the early returns about potentially LeBron coming back. Do you think this is a move that Donovan welcomes with open arms?
I would hope so, because I think Donovan has to understand that it's not happened yet with him. So I think he needs to be, as open-minded as possible. And look, I get it. I do feel like that when you look at this particular iteration of the Cavaliers, they really wanted to be able to do this without LeBron. And that's certainly understandable. But I will say this. This has been the most successful basketball team without LeBron James since the late 80s, early 90s. And I'm going back to Doherty, Price, Elo, Hot Rod Williams, Steve Kerr, Danny Ferry. So you're going all the way back, a very, very long time. And so I do think that there is something to be said for the success that they have had without LeBron James. this is, I would say this is, this might be the most complete team that LeBron will have joined, right? And that is without any knowledge of what Kobe Altman might have in the hopper or be burning up the cell phone minutes to try and put together.
All right, Daryl, before we talk a little bit about the Browns, we got more information on Brendan Sorsby today. It appears he's just going to be content sitting out this season. He's not pursuing further litigation and is looking forward to being eligible in the 2027 class. We get to a 27 class after all these guys play a year of college. Sorsby sits a year out. Where do you see him falling into that class and actually a team taking a shot at him?
Well, I think it was Dane Brugler had a third-round grade on him or said he had a third-round grade, so I don't know that he's in the upper echelon of the class coming out, that's for sure. But it really does feel like this was a compromise. Hey, you drop your litigation. We're going to let you into the draft. We'll let bygones be bygones. Oh, by the way, don't ever do it again, right? I feel like that was the agreement that was reached today and certainly spelled out by the league and the NFLPA in that memo that went out. And look, it's right on par, right? It basically becomes an unsaid one-year suspension. They didn't let him in the supplemental draft, but said he'll be draft eligible in April of 2027. So it feels like a bit of a compromise there. He'll have to take the season off playing football. I don't know what he's going to do to keep himself fresh and game ready or whatever for the draft process upcoming. But it does feel like that was really the compromise. Because that's kind of how the NFL has handled gambling situations with players. It typically has resulted in a 1 year suspension. That kind of feels like what this is. And so they stay out of the courtroom, and this kid can go into the draft next year. But as of right now, I don't know if he's a first-round pick. We'll see. But I kind of still feel like, and it's part of the reason I didn't want the Browns to bid on him in the supplemental draft besides the gambling risk there. But I did like the statement from him today. He took accountability for his actions. I thought that was very important for him to say. And it kind of falls in line with what Andrew Berry talked about when he was on with Anthony Lima and myself a couple weeks ago, right? And so now he just needs to make sure he does everything possible to keep himself and keep his nose clean when it comes to the gambling thing. But, I don't know that he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the upcoming class. But, look, we thought this was going to be a stellar quarterback class in 26. It never materialized, so we got to see how this college football season plays itself out.
And again, Daryl Ryder with us. Daryl, welcome to the Browns offseason. So I have to ask you, are we leaning any sort of way when it comes to...
Do you really have to ask me, though? It is the Browns. It is Browns summer vacation. So does it really need to be asked? No, go ahead.
I think it has to be. I mean, I don't know. I don't know any other way to start this off talking about the Browns. But are we leaning a certain way? Do we think that somebody is going to be named starting quarterback week one more than we think another player at this moment in time?
After the Bills join practice. That's my prediction.
Do you think a name?
I think they will wait until after the Bills join practice to pick a name out of the hat. And hey, you know what? Maybe Todd Monken pulls a Romeo Crennel and flips a coin. you know what? I honestly think they ought to do a special. They should do a half-hour ESPN-style special to name their starting quarterback just to waste all of our time. You know, like, I think that's how they ought to do it, you know?
How do you put that on for TV, Daryl? Is it a coin? Do you go lottery balls? Lottery balls seems fun.
Yeah, I think you could do that. Maybe a frozen envelope or something. If you want to you want to make sure you pull the right card, right? You already made the decision, but to make sure you pull the right card out of the envelope, you know, maybe a little, you know, a little ice on that or something. But yeah, I think that I still think Deshaun Watson's winning this job. We're going to have to suffer through, I don't know, 4, 6, whatever, how many weeks of that before we get to watch Shedeur Sanders, and then we'll, you know, see what the kid can do. But I don't think that there's a true leader in the clubhouse right now. I don't think that Todd Monken's made up his mind, but my money is on when the dust settles, if he is healthy, that it's going to be Deshaun.
When we talk about these quarterbacks earlier, interesting, there's some popping up my mind today. We obviously got the report that, you know, Deshaun's back in the building. He's practicing, or he's getting, you know.
It's quarterback Instagram season.
Oh, yeah,
It's quarterback workout video on the gram season. So that's how we know Deshaun is in the building, because he's hitting the gram hard with them workout videos.
He's in Berea, so he's in the building. He's doing
just
something.
Scintillating stuff. And see, this is why you need to have the half hour waste all of our time TV special to reveal it, right? This is all the type of foot they can just bring all this up. Say, hey, here's Deshaun in February. Here's Deshaun in March. Here's the progression to April and May and June. And oh, here's him at the facility in July. Oh, and here's some more training camp and preseason footage for you to enjoy. Oh, yeah, by the way, he's going to be your starting quarterback this fall. That's how this is going to end. I'm convinced of it.
Darryl, is there something to be said about that? At least the public perception of leadership that he has, because we have not only this, but you also have the quarterback camp that he's holding down in Florida. We had Shador saying he's pretty much just going to that. It feels like Deshaun, it might just be veteran in the room, knows how this thing works, but it seems like in that department is kind of ahead on everything.
The Cleveland Browns remain the offseason champions of the quarterback workout camps. Yeah, I just don't care. I really don't. Good for him. You know, it's fine. These guys can bond off the field and that other nonsense. I mean, it really hasn't worked to this point over 27 years of all the bonding that's been done at these things. But to be fair, while I, you know, sarcastically brush it off and laugh at it, to be fair, if he didn't do it, we'd all be ripping him for it, right? For not doing it. Oh, he's not committed, and he just is assuming he's got the job, yada, 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 right? Same thing with Shador. Who does Shador think he is? He can't spend time with his teammates on his vacation time and can't work out, and he's not, you know. So, like, I don't get excited by Instagram videos. I don't get excited by workouts on the beach with teammates. I don't get excited by any of that nonsense. I get excited about completed practice, passes in practice, and consistency in practice, and then ultimately winning games during the regular season on Sunday. That's what's going to get me excited. The rest of this stuff is window dressing to me at this point.
All right, Darryl, before I let you go, Ben Solak wrote that...
By the way, was that a grumpy enough answer for you?
Yeah, no, that about cleared it. I think that was good.
You know what that is? That's the residue of me watching 27 years of these crappy quarterbacks. That's what that's the residue of. So when they give me a good quarterback to watch, I'll be in a much better mood when talking about the quarterbacks.
Then, if we had a Josh Allen to do that, and then do the off-season videos, excite you of watching him throw on the
yes!
beach?
Okay. Yes! Yes! Right. Inject it into my veins!
Yeah, he's taking a big step up this year. I saw that spiral.
Yeah, because you know what Deshaun Watson's not showing you? He's not showing you the incomplete passes during those workouts, okay?
He's certainly not. Real quick, Darryl, Ben Solak wrote, Mike Rutenberg, he labeled him as one of the most intriguing X factors of the NFL season this upcoming year because of schematic deception and everything else. Do we feel like Mike Rutenberg holds that kind of power while replacing Jim Schwartz and losing Myles Garrett, or is this defense just bound to be at least a little bit worse than it was last year?
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping he does have that kind of power. Right?
That makes two of us.
I think we're all looking forward to that, right? But yeah, the premise of him retaining Schwartz's system, that's the base system, right? Of course, he's going to come in and add his own wrinkles to things. No Myles Garrett, but you got Jared Verse now, right? Hopefully, what he schemes up, what he the adjustments, the alterations he's making to Schwartz's system, hopefully they pay dividends. They got a lot of exciting players on that side of the football, and my expectation, if healthy, those players are going to be able to pick up where they left off last year, which means this defense, while it might not be as elite as it was with Myles Garrett, it should still be pretty good.
Darryl, always appreciate the time. Enjoy your vacation. And just throw a video of the beach up on the TV. Crack open a cold one and sit back.
Well, I'll be in tomorrow and Thursday afternoon and Friday morning and Sunday morning. And then you won't hear from me for 2 weeks. So before people say Darryl got fired, I'm just taking my summer sabbatical after Sunday morning.
Enjoy it, Darryl.
You bet.
Darryl Ryder, our Cleveland Sports Beat reporter, brought to you there courtesy of Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We'll react to what Darryl had to say. And is there anything to Deshaun leading the leadership battle right now against Shador? We'll break it down in 5 minutes. It's Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Just got done talking to Daryl Ryder, our Cleveland sports beat reporter. If you missed it, you can find it over at 923thefan.com. Cut up here in just a little bit as well. You miss any moment in the show, use the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app, powered by Integrated Restoration, your local experts in water, fire, and storm disaster restoration. Really good stuff out of Daryl, talking both Cavs and Browns. But I did want to highlight, Daryl obviously cracking jokes about his grumpy quarterback answer and guys throwing on the beach and not caring about workout videos. But we got the report today. You can see it on Deshaun's Instagram. He's in Berea working at the team facility, trying to get ready for the upcoming training camp and, you know, the offseason that pursues him, getting ready to compete for the job. And it did just get me thinking. Like, this is a position where I don't know that I say Deshaun has the lead in the when it comes to the leadership battle. Like, I think that Shador has shown himself to be a leader in a locker room. In college, I think guys have gravitated towards him as we looked to last year. Always seemed like he had somebody by his side that he was talking to. Seemed like his teammates liked him. We had no reason to believe anything otherwise. No reports, nothing that we could see with our own two eyes. But this is now instance number two, right? Deshaun's back at the building. It's great for perception. It's great for optics. Everybody sees him committed to trying to compete for the job, which, by the way, I do think he deserves a little bit of credit for. Like, if there's something to be said to make sure that you're back in Berea, you're at the stadium, or you're at the facility, excuse me, and you are working and clearly trying to be the best version of yourself you can be. How many times did we have the conversation about, well, Deshaun doesn't actually care if he plays. He's here. He's already collecting his $230 million. It doesn't make a difference. But I mean, very clearly, I think a lot of people think that it makes a difference. I think that it's very clear that he is out here trying to compete and win the job, trying to get back to an NFL level, trying to be a quarterback in the league. I've not seen somebody who just doesn't care, who's not trying to go out there. Like, there is a little bit of credit that I think is due in that department. I don't think a lot of people want to give him. But being back here, I mean, it does mean something on the outside looking in. It does show that want to. It does show that desire. And even if it's nothing, even if it's you hopping in the gym for 25 minutes to take a video of you working out and basically just filming for content, I don't think that's what he's doing, but it's obviously up in the air. It's up for debate of whether or not that is what he could do. But if that was the case, it looks really good when you go and take a look at it. Like, it looks like you're doing the right thing. It is going to shape people's perception of the battle. And when you combine that with the idea that it is Deshaun who is holding the camp for his fellow teammates down in, you know, Florida and hosting everybody. And we got the Shador comments earlier. He's like, we're all teammates. I'm just going to go to Deshaun's. I'm not going to hold my own. Why would I hold two separate ones? You know, we all get together. We're all friends. Kumbaya. And again, I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. But it is Deshaun hosting it. It is Deshaun who's back in the building. It does seem like if I'm looking for somebody right now to take the step up, act like a leader, act like a guy who's in command and going to be QB1, it looks like that Deshaun's trying to take those reins and trying to at least make the perception be that I'm the guy that's doing it. Now, I think ultimately what this comes down to is something that Joe Thomas talked about earlier today when he was on with Ken and Anthony this morning, and why he feels that right now Deshaun is the front runner in the competition.
I think it strictly just comes down to experience. Deshaun Watson's played in multiple systems. He's played in a lot of NFL games, big games at that. And it's a much easier thing for him to pick up an offense quickly. Every coach that I've ever been around is going to value somebody that can execute the offense at a basic level, the way that they see it, the way that they install it, over a player that you just have a lot more unknowns. And right now with Shador, because he doesn't have that experience, he's going to go out there and it's going to be a lot harder for him to operate the offense, to give the guys around him an opportunity to learn the offense and have success. And so that's, to me, what Deshaun brings right now. And a coach values that because he needs to be able to see what his offense can do and what the other guys around him can do. So I think it just really comes down to experience, why I would have to bet that right now Deshaun is the front runner to be that starter in week one.
So obviously Joe talks a lot about the actual on the field traits of experience, which makes sense, right? That's why we all assumed that the inside track, everything else, why if there was going to be a starter named by training camp, it was likely going to be Deshaun, because you are the veteran, because you do have that experience. I also think when we talk about this leadership and the outside perception of where you're supposed to be, why you're supposed to be there, the things you're supposed to host, I think I can circle that right back to Deshaun also being the experienced guy in the room. We talk about quarterbacks holding camps for their fellow teammates and getting guys in there because they're QB1. That's what you're supposed to do. I think that's also, it didn't even, I mean, when the question was asked, didn't necessarily sound like Shador was even of the mindset that, hey, I should be holding a quarterback camp because that's what the quarterbacks in the NFL do. It's like, oh, Deshaun's holding one? Yeah, I'll just go to that. But Deshaun knows that's the type of thing you're supposed to do. He's been around the block. He's been around the league. He's seen how the rest of the quarterbacks around the league have acted and how he was probably acting in a time when he was in Houston. Those are just things you come to understand with time. So this is where I think the leadership battle ultimately boils down to. And I don't think it makes much of a difference. Like, if there is a difference to, hey, I look like the leader to all the media, and that not actually playing a difference in a quarterback battle. It's going to be about who the teammate trusts. It's going to be about who the coaches trust, and ultimately who the GM in the front office and your owner want to put onto the field, right? Those are the most determining factors. But, I mean, I guess in the intermediate, in the everybody else looking into this around the league, around the NFL fan bases, inside of this fan base, yeah, Deshaun looks like he's doing more right now. I don't even think that that even stacks up for a lot of people. Again, I try to give my credit where I think it's due for Deshaun. I think it's nice that he's in Berea. I think it's nice that he's in the facility and clearly trying to work. But I don't even think that rubs fans in a way that, you know, makes them more liking to Deshaun. Because I think that we are so far past the idea with the quarterbacks that we have in this room right now. There's not much you can do off the field that I think gets a ton of us excited, right? I think that works for a year or two. That works if you look intriguing. That works if we've never seen you play. When it comes to Deshaun, having the years that he has had here, you could go out there and, I mean, throw a ball 150 yards through the air on a dime, and it's going to be like, that's great, he did it in training camp, right? That's great, he did it in practice. Show me that when the pads are on. It's like, well, you can't because he'd be throwing it to the guy in the sixth row. But that just feels like the mentality that's there, and it's fine that mentality exists. You're not going to show me anything before the season starts when you're Deshaun Watson that is going to convince me you should be quarterback one, right? I can't see that with my own two eyes. That's going to come down to Todd Monken's decision. That's going to come down to what is he doing in the, you know, getting the offensive line ready, reading defenses, all the things that is very difficult to tell because we don't know what you're striving for in practice. That's where it's going to be won. But I think from a fan base perspective, which is about the only person you might be winning over with this, maybe it goes some way with Todd Monken that he's easy in the building. Maybe that takes a stride. Ultimately, I think it's going to come down to who he thinks he can win with and not the guy that's showing up during a workout or hosting all of his teammates in the offseason for. 216-474-0092. Is Deshaun leading the leadership battle right now against Shador between the quarterbacks? Plus, coming up here in 5 minutes as well, Brendan Sorsby, the update that we got today in his eligibility and whether or not he's actually got a shot. Coming up here in 5 minutes again on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. We have David Shepard, SiriusXM NBA Radio, set to break down NBA free agency, where the Cavs sit in this entire mess, coming up for you at 9 o'clock. Guardians also not far away from wrapping up, so we're going to react to them a little bit later on in the show. But I did want to talk a little bit about the additional information we got on Brendan Sorsby today. Because, I thought it was an interesting decision. I actually thought Daryl had some really good stuff on this as well. Because I think Daryl has the right read on the situation of what we're looking at right now. Because Sorsby essentially came out in that he accepted 100% responsibility for his actions, didn't have control of his gambling problem, and he's now just committing to getting ready for the 2027 NFL draft. And the NFL seems like they're going to be completely letting him walk into the 27 class. Doesn't seem like there'd be a suspension following, at least where we stand right now. And this serves as about a pseudo one-year suspension. But what it really sounds like is about an agreement. Right, probably just came to terms of, hey, we'll let you come in here, no problem whatsoever. You can come into the 27 class, drop the litigation. Right, because this is not going to be any good for you. You're going to enter the supplemental draft. You're going to be really late to joining these teams. You're probably not going to have a chance to play anyway. It's not going to be that much different, and we're probably going to suspend you. So might as well just wait it out. But that does seem like what this is for me. But I get so confused on this because, one, I don't really think that this is much of a I'm taking accountability for my actions, Brendan Sorsby move. And it's just like, yeah, I'll just wait and get ready for the 27 class. The man got denied from the supplemental draft, was getting ready to, you know, try to sue the NFL. The NFL came around and said, and I don't know that they would have had a good chance to win the actual, you know, legal battle. The NFL, that is, because proper practice or former practice and the way that the CBA is written, it might just be Sorsby ends up winning it. But you got denied from that. You were having to try to sue the NFL before you even got into the league. And you had to been denied by the CFL. So you had no chance almost to play football this season. Seems like almost a little bit of a save face move if you're going to ask me, if we're being 100% honest. Because winning a lawsuit against the NFL, suing your employer, and then immediately trying to come back in and have positives that come out of this. Not only do I think the NFL does not take kindly to being sued by their players and the guys who are trying to start careers inside of their league, I also think it looks like you're not taking accountability for your actions anyway. It's like, oh, you won't let me in? I'll just sue you so I can get around the fact that I gambled and everything else, and I can get into the league the way that I want to, and I can avoid as much punishment as possible. That's what it seems to paint to me. So, again, maybe you save face a little bit, maybe you didn't. But now the interesting question comes from, you're going to be able to enter the 2027 class. I think you're already on the back foot. We have, Daryl mentioned Dane Brugler, I believe, had a third-round grade on him. Coach Riz, our very own from the station, as well as Cleveland.com, had him placed, I think, as his ninth quarterback in the very early 2027 class outlook. So, like, there's people who had first-round grades on him and thought he was really good, but you're already fighting an uphill battle. And I thought Albert Breer, who was on Afternoon Drive today of the MMQB, did a very nice job of breaking down where Sorsby is going and turning his focus now into next year's class.
The idea of getting into a situation where you're practicing and meeting and earning your, you know, earning your way with a team, I think would have been, you know, would have been huge for him. You know, like, I think the flip side now is you're not playing for a year. And so there's a cost to that, you know, and then I think on top of it, it's, you know, it's also like, you know, when we get to next year, he's still sort of this raw prospect, you know, or where like a lot of the questions that we have about him now are going to be the same then. And to me, it like sort of presents the question, okay, like if next year's class is as good as we think it's going to be, and there are, I mean, let's just say 7 or 8 guys that go in the top 100 picks, right? If that's the case, I mean, this is going to be a tiebreaker, you know, everything that he's been through. And at the very least, he gets to put it behind him. He gets to serve what amounts to a 1-year suspension. He knows the NFL is going to let him in next year.
I think the thing that Albert brings up that's, I mean, a really interesting fact, though, is I do think that Brendan Sorsby loses that tiebreaker because of the situation you have. And this is supposed to be a loaded quarterback class. Ultimately, we'll see the way it plays out. A lot of times we think much higher of a class when we sit here and talk about it in June and July comparatively to when we're talking about it in April when the draft is actually happening. But you're losing that tiebreaker. If I'm stuck between, I mean, we'll say Lenora Sellers and Brendan Sorsby, if I think they're relatively the same, I'm going to look at Lenora Sellers and go, well, he didn't have a gambling addiction. He didn't have a very public, you know, outcry trying to get back into college football, into the NFL, into the CFL, and all of the optics that come along with it. I'll probably just take my swing on Lenora Sellers or take my swing on CJ Carr, whatever quarterback is sitting there for you to make a decision, whether it be in the first, second, third round. I just don't know how much of a chance you have to actually continue your career. Like, if I'm Brendan Sorsby, it might be terrible optics. You might think it's saving face. I don't know that you made anywhere close to the correct decision and actually dropping the litigation. And that's just me looking at it from an objective standpoint of getting forced your way into the NFL. Albert mentioned the fact that he thinks being on a team, earning good rapport with that team goes a really long way. I think it does too. I think that's the best case scenario for him as an individual. I think that helps you the most. But now, I can't see a world where Brendan Sorsby is a first-round pick in 2027. If we're being honest, I don't know I can see a world where Brendan Sorsby is a second-round pick. It might be difficult to be a third-round pick. You might be in a day three situation simply because not only do you have this hanging over your head, which already made it difficult. We were debating whether or not use a third round supplemental pick on Sorsby in the first place. But now you're actually in the 27 class. Now you don't have, an entire year of football that you're missing. And anybody who doesn't think being a quarterback and being on a team and going through the ins and outs of practice every day, looking at defenses, breaking down defenses, having the mental and physical reps of being a quarterback matter a ton would be dramatically wrong. Like, being in that every single day makes a difference. Having those repetitions, having that go through and being able to see it and stay fresh in it makes a difference. Ask Deshaun Watson. I'm sure he could tell you flat out when we talked about kicking off the rust and it might take him a little bit to get going. And after he served his 11 game suspension, it might never get going in those six games that we were going to see of Deshaun. Cause it does take time to knock off. And that is a guy who is a former top five quarterback in the NFL, not a guy who wasn't even widely considered to be a top five quarterback in his draft class. We are playing on different levels of this. But it extends farther than that. Like, sure, you might be a third, fourth, fifth round pick. We know the success stories of quarterbacks in those rounds, right? And you know the individual ones. You know Tom Brady, you know Brock Purdy, you know guys that go undrafted, the Tony Romos of the world. We all highlight those because they're so far and few in between. You get relegated to a fourth or fifth round pick. Again, like, that is actively what we're looking at with Shedeur Sanders right now. And a guy who is widely more considered to be talented than that, Sorsby will have at least that going for him in the most part. But you're going to be fighting an uphill battle like that. And if we're looking at it honestly, Shedeur got relatively lucky that he got put into a situation where he could play football in year one, even fighting against Kevin Stefanski in order to make it happen. But I would say most quarterbacks that end up being fourth, fifth round picks usually don't get that opportunity. A lot of the times we see those guys flutter out of the NFL without ever taking a snap. So I just don't know how much of an opportunity you're really going to have to prove yourself. And what's going to be, obviously, not only a heavy-loaded quarterback class, but when you start falling behind, and yeah, you are maybe considered the ninth, tenth, player off the board at that position, well, there's not going to be 9 or 10 teams looking for quarterbacks. And if they are, if they take those guys ahead of you, you're not going to be the front runner in the competition, and there's going to be veterans flipping around. We're not going to see 9 new starting quarterbacks from one draft class. Doesn't matter how great they are. The likelihood of that actually happening is so low that you're probably going to be behind on the depth chart. You're not going to get a team to take a full swing on you and be like, here's the opportunity. We really don't even see the opportunities that guys like Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur got last year, right? Where we put one, maybe two veterans in front of you, but you're probably going to get an opportunity to play. And we used a third round pick on Dylan Gabriel, so we want to see what he's got. Most of the time you're looking into situations where we're drafting him and he's going to be our backup quarterback. And maybe, just maybe an injury happens or something along the way allows you to get the opportunity to show what you have. And there's guys who make careers out of that, being backups. There's guys who make careers out of that, ascending into starting quarterbacks. It doesn't doom you if you're Brennan Sorsby, but it puts you so far behind the back foot. And, like, we can talk about it. I mean, the guy probably deserves it. You made some stupid decisions. You deserve to pay the punishments for it. But, again, I just don't know how you sit back and essentially accept that to be your fate. Again, being in a quarterback room for this season, being in the NFL for this season, felt like your one-way ticket of, yeah, I'm going to be redshirted. I'll probably get suspended. It probably won't matter. I wasn't going to play this year. But, I mean, especially when we talk about a team like the Steelers, who weren't going to be in an opportunity to draft a very high quarterback, more likely than not. With Aaron Rodgers starting for them this year, they're likely going to ascend somewhere in the 8-plus win territory. And they're probably not going to be among the bottom teams in the NFL. They're probably going to be looking at a quarterback in the mid to first round, or they're going to be looking at one in the second round. You had all the opportunity to be there, learn under Aaron Rodgers, get your opportunity, figure out what NFL life is like. And then Pittsburgh to potentially just reinvest into you and be like, you know what, that's our quarterback moving forward. Right? And you might have to battle with Will Howard and Drew Aller. That's a battle you might win. You're not winning that battle this year. Again, the Steelers aren't going to turn around and be like, you know what, yeah, let's just take a shot on Brennan Sorsby, make him our quarterback of the future. They're going to take somebody that's played football the last year, been inside of a college locker room, and has actually showed them something in the 2026 season. You have lost the game. mean, I don't know how exactly you were supposed to win it, but this is where it takes you so far out of it, where it felt like Brent Sorsby might have been some team savior, might have been some team's get-out-of-jail-free card when it came to the 2027 class, and we don't even have to be bad this year, but we at least have the chance. We have the opportunity to get out in front of it, commit to a guy, get him to learn the system. We get him in here earlier, and he essentially, you know, serves as what was just going to be a quarterback in the 26 class, something that was, I mean, just barren. Had no quarterbacks in it almost whatsoever. You give yourself that chance. You give yourself that opportunity, and you're just left with nothing right now. 216-474-0092. Does Brennan Sorsby have a fighting chance in the 2027 quarterback class in your eyes? I don't even think there's really a pathway to him being, I mean, maybe a third-round pick. I think it's most likely that he probably ends up as a day-three pick and starts his career so far on the back foot. But I want to hear from you guys. And coming up here at 9 o'clock, David Shepard, SiriusXM NBA Radio, going to help us break down all of NBA free agency. Plus, we have Guardians to react to coming up in this 9 o'clock hour. They just wrapped up against the Rangers, and boy, oh boy, do we have a doozy to talk about. It's all coming your way here in the next little bit. On Overtime with Jake Volnick on the Fan.